All right, so this morning we talked about just talking to people. That's really what our discussion is. All we're going to do is just continue that discussion right now, just talking to people. You don't have to literally engage in a Bible study with someone in a sit-down format. I might do that. Someone else might do that for you. My point I made this morning is sometime down the road, that does have to happen. We can't convert people to Christ apart from giving them the knowledge that is necessary for that conversion. So at some point, we have to sit down and say, here's the information, and this is what you do with that, or at least here's your decision. Where are you at, and how are you going to decide? Okay? But in the process of getting that person to the table, so to speak, this is where you may come in. Any of you may come in, is helping people like me to get that person and me and you sitting down together for that purpose. Now, you don't have to be instrumental in every aspect of that, but this is something that anybody can do, okay? And some of you are doing that already, and I realize that, and I so appreciate that, but what we need to do is get more of us on board to doing that, okay? That's how we're going to grow this congregation, is talking. We're not going to grow it by church going. We're not going to grow it by song singing. We're not going to grow it by Lord's Supper taking. Those are things we do once we get here. But what's going to grow this congregation is for us to get out talking to people. Networking, by the way, is the best form of growth and advertising. It's also the cheapest. Okay? So just think about that as we go forward in our talking to people. Now, some of you in the Thursday night class will recognize a little bit of this material. I did rob it from our last fall's Thursday night class. Why reinvent the wheel, right? But some of it's new, too. So I kind of put some new stuff in here. It's just to keep you alert. And so you don't go, hey, I've seen it before. And then you just kind of nod off. And, you know, we don't want any of that. So we just kind of threw some extra stuff in here just so you can see this for in kind of a new light, if you will. So your objective when talking to people, remember we talked this morning about paths of conversation. You don't dictate what is said as much as you dictate where it's going. You know why you met. You know what this is all about. You understand the, you know, kind of the reason for this discussion you're having with this person. You realize what that is for what it is. The other person may or may not. That's okay. But you're simply making a channel of thought and then letting the words and the dialogue fill that in. But you are trying to get someone to defend their own belief system. Remember what we talked about this morning? We talked about planting seeds of truth, but we also talked about planting seeds of doubt. So you don't necessarily consciously plant seeds of doubt. You plant seeds of doubt by planting seeds of truth, ironically. The more truth that you give to someone, the more you expose them to the truth, and that creates that doubt. And you actually want that. You don't want them to doubt the truth. You want them to doubt what they thought was the truth that isn't. That's what you want them to doubt. And they don't have to answer to you about this, but they do have to answer their own conscience, and they do have to answer the word. Okay? So the word is really what magnifies, or I should say, what exposes that doubt, that poor teaching, that false conclusion, whatever it is that needs to be, you know, rooted up and exposed for what it is and removed, and then the truth put in its place, if you kind of look at it in that way. So when it comes to spiritual beliefs, most people don't really understand where they got their beliefs from. Isn't that sad? Most people have a belief that they call a religious belief, but they can't explain to you where they got that from. They can't really defend that. All they have is opinions. Have you ever talked to anyone like this? Okay, so a few of you, you know, you've talked to people like this, probably people you know, friends, family, you know, relatives, coworkers, you know, you say, well, that's interesting, where'd you get that from? And they're like, I don't know, my preacher told me, my church teaches this, got it from a church bulletin, I read it in a book, I saw it on a, you know, Discovery Channel, which is the primary source of correct, authentic information for all Bible students. You know, it's just people just they pluck this stuff out of thin air sometimes. They just thought it was true. They thought they heard this. They thought the preacher said this. I know we never do that, right? Okay. So this can happen to across the board. It can happen to anyway. Most proofs, what people call proofs, this is my proof for what I believe, is usually speculation or speculative theories. They just don't really know where it came from. But it sounds good. or they've had this in their head for a long time, or people that they really respect have told them this, so they don't want to, you know, compromise that respect that they have for them by questioning those people. And so that they assume it to be true, but they really don't know what the truth is necessarily. I'm not saying everything they believe is not true. That's not an accurate statement. But perhaps very important things that they ought to believe in are missing, or things that they have placed and given much importance to may not be true. That is dangerous, okay? So just think about that. If what they say is true, then the Bible is going to defend it. And if what they say is not true, then the Bible can't possibly defend it, because the Bible is not going to defend an untruth. All it defends is what is true. So this is where we eventually, ultimately, get to the Word. And you may not do this yourself. That may be something that I can do with you or for you, but it is something that you need to be aware of, that ultimately we have to come down to brass tacks. We can't just say, well, our church teaches, because we can't talk like that. It doesn't really matter what our church teaches. What matters is what's true. Would you agree? Yeah. All right, so what we're trying to do then is just simply come down to an understanding that we have a source of information for what is true. And we're using that source as, alluding to that source being the Bible. And someone else might say, well, I think this other source or that source. And you run into this all the time, where someone was going to say, well, I think the Quran is just as truthful as the Bible. Or I think my, you know, mother-in-law is just as truthful as the Bible. Or I think, you know, myself, I am just as truthworthy as the Bible. And it's like, we need to finally get to a source of authority. You don't have to do all that yourself, but it does have to get done. And you are instrumental in doing that, or getting to that point or to that objective, by what you say up front. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about tonight. That's where this is all going, is to show you that there's some things that you can do to steer people toward that truth. Okay? So your objective then is to persuade people to, as you see on the screen, to re-examine what they really believe. Why? Because they need to believe exactly what you believe, right? No, that's not the objective. The objective is for them to believe in what is true. What is the truth? Which should be what you believe, but regardless, that's what we should all be pursuing, is the truth, okay? The credibility of their sources or information may not be what they thought it was. You may know that up front. They may not know that. You've gotten to the table, so to speak, first. They're just coming after. And we're not saying that in a derogatory way towards someone's intelligence or their motives. We're simply saying that you have the advantage of knowing this first, whereas they have not yet learned this. Would that be fair? By the way, you were in that position at one time. Someone else knew that or had that advantage, and then you came to the table. And now you learned, and now there you are, right? So it happens to all of us in that same way. So I have these questions, as you know, you should know these by now, these two very, very important questions. I use these all the time in one form or another. Where'd you get that from? Who told you that? And these are really powerful because they are not accusatory. They are simply asking a question. And secondly, they are not forcing a person to get angry or confrontational. They're simply turning the table of that discussion around to themselves. It's very easy, as you know, for anyone to make a statement, some outlandish statement, especially in the religious context, spiritual reality or whatever they want to call that. It's very easy for someone to do that and then to throw it down and force you to either prove or disprove it. And what you're doing is you're simply turning that whole thing around and say, you're the one that just made the statement. Why don't you prove that? Why don't you provide for me, the listener, the defense for that statement that you just made? Is that fair? They made the statement. Why do I have to defend it? Or why do I have to disprove it? All I have to do is have them prove or disprove that. And therein is the weakness, usually, of their argument. Because they don't have a support. They don't have a defense. They just thought they did. And you know better. This is where you plant that seeds of doubt here, as it might be, multiple, is because you're forcing them to come to terms with the fact that basically, in many cases, what they might have thought was the truth is actually an opinion, or it's just simply a conglomeration of different ideas that never were supported, and they just bought it all as a package deal. By the way, this is how denominational error begins. This is how all false religion begins, is as people just assuming something to be true and when it really isn't, and then going from there on based on that premise and going from there into that, taking that road down that direction there, okay? So many people, as you know, put a great amount of weight on conclusions of people who are unauthorized to speak in this capacity. Remember what's at stake here. We're not talking about, what's the best car out there, or what's the best TV program, or, you know, what's your favorite color, or, you know, who's the best athlete. We're not talking about mundane, worldly things like that. We're not dealing with that. What we're talking about here is, where is your soul going to be when you leave this earth? That's a pretty important subject. That is not something to be taken lightly. That is not something to take and entrust that valuable asset, your soul, into the hands of someone who is unqualified to determine the outcome of that. Suppose you had $1 million and you wanted to invest that. Would you go to, say, some guy living under a bridge, covered with cardboard? Would you go to him and ask him? There's only one good answer here. Okay. No, you would not go to him. Why is that? Because he's proved already, because he's living under a bridge, that he's not really one to give you financial advice. All right? I'm not saying that he's unintelligent. I'm just simply saying that things have not worked out well for him so far because of his circumstance. So who do you want to go to? Someone that knows what they're talking about. Someone who has revealed that knowledge in some cogent or intelligent manner, someone who has proven his ability, someone who has authority to speak, and again, has proven that authority. Who would that be? Don't think of your preacher. Think of Christ. Think of Jesus Christ and what he has provided as a proof to who he is, what he has to say, and the credentials that he brings to the table. So this is ultimately, I'm summing up a lot of stuff here in what we call apologies or evidences here. But really what it comes down to is we lay that on the table. We say, here's the evidence that Christ provides. He knows what he's talking about. He's been there. He's been in the afterlife. He's been in the pre-existence with God. He knows what your soul is going through. He knows what your soul is right now. He knows where it's going. Isn't he the best one then to talk to? Let's go and look at what he says. And let's talk about that, all right? And that's not where a lot of people are right now. This is where we want to get them. We want to get them to that point. Let's talk to someone who is qualified to speak on the subject of your soul. Because preachers aren't the people. Priests are not the people. Rabbis are not the people. Some self-appointed spiritual guru is not the person to talk to. Why? Because these people are all here in this world, in this life. They've never seen any more than what you've seen. I'm a preacher of the gospel, but I have not seen God. I have not seen the spiritual realm. I have not seen what happens to my soul if I do obey or don't obey God. I only know what is true because of what God has told me, but what he's told me, he has proven to be true by the evidences necessary to establish those credentials. All we're doing here is we're just appealing to a person's intelligence. We're saying, you're an intelligent person. If I were to give you good information, I understand that you would make a wise decision based on good information because of the intelligence that you possess. In other words, we're not denigrating or degrading a person. We're actually building them up and saying, it really doesn't matter what you believe thus far. What you need to know now is what is true and where is that truth taking you? And so this is where we come in, hopefully to help. So what if those authorities are wrong? This is, again, planting that seed of doubt. Okay, what if those authorities are wrong? What are the implications and consequences of their being wrong? All right, so someone's trusted, for example, in their pastor, because that's the popular word out there for people in my position, unbiblical as it might be, for my position nonetheless. That's what people say. You're the pastor. What if someone comes to you and says, well, my pastor said, and then you say something to the effect of, where did he get that from? Or who told him that? What if he's right? What if he's wrong? I mean, this is forcing someone to really examine it in light of that, rather than just simply saying, well, I trust my pastor. Well, it's not about whether you trust him or not. It's about whether he's qualified to speak or not. Do you understand what I'm saying? You could trust someone implicitly, but that doesn't make them qualified to speak in a most important manner. You could trust the guy under the bridge if you want to. Trust him implicitly if you want to, but that doesn't make him qualified to speak on something very important. So there's a difference here between someone who has credentials and is qualified to speak, has authority to say what he says, and then some other person who you trust. What we're trying to do is bring those two things together. The one who is qualified to speak is the one who you should trust the most. So that's really our job as Bible teachers and conversion class teachers, is we bring those two people, in essence, together, those two roles together. And of course, that person is Christ there. Okay, so understand what people appeal to. This is really important. Not that you have to memorize the list, but you just have to be aware that people appeal to different things. Look at the list here. First of all, personal feelings, experiences, or observations. Do people appeal to that as an authority? Sure they do, all the time. And you hear it in their language. Well, this is what I feel. Well, this is what I believe. Well, this is what I think is true. There's three phrases I just used there. I think, I feel, I believe. Right? And those are things that qualify as authoritative, concrete, credible statements. No. What are these? These are opinions. That's all they are. These are opinions by themselves. It doesn't matter how strongly one feels it. It doesn't matter how passionately they feel it. It doesn't matter if they think they can passionately defend that. All they are, until proof is given, until evidence is brought in and proof is established, all these are is opinions. I think, I feel, I believe are not statements of authority. They are simply statements of opinion. And you need to recognize that. You need to understand what's going on. You don't have to call them on it right there. Ah, that's an opinion. You know, should have known that. I've caught you. You don't have to do that. But at the same time, in your mind, you're processing this as, okay, so now I'm learning where this person's coming from. They're basing their theology, their doctrine of God, on this grand opinion that they have accepted as something true, when in fact it has yet to be proven. Now at least you know where they're coming from. How about family members, parents, spouses, etc.? Has anyone ever placed a great deal of confidence on them? Has anyone entrusted their soul to those people? Do you think anyone ever in all time? Oh yeah, lots of people do all the time. And you will meet these people if you have not yet. Okay, admired friends or mentors, same thing. Experts, authority figures, including pastors, priests, rabbis, gurus, etc. Okay, books written by authority figures. I get this all the time. Well, I read this book. It's like, really? Okay, so you set aside the book, you know, the good book, and you set that aside because that didn't appeal to you in the way that you wanted. But instead, you went to the bookstore and picked out this book, and this is your answer. This is going to guide you through this life into the life to come. By the way, that's written by a guy who's never been there, who's never seen it, who's never experienced death, who's never experienced the afterlife. Over here, this is written by someone, if you will, who has been there and knows all of that intimately, but this other guy doesn't, but you bought this book over the Bible. How does that make sense? Now, you don't come out and say that in those words, but you're there already. You're understanding what's going on here, okay? And then human philosophy, specific philosophers, admired philosophers, someone might bring a certain one into the picture. Scientific facts, scientific theories, what's the most popular one out there? Probably evolution as a scientific theory that most people have bought into, that they think is scientific, when there's quite honestly nothing scientific about it. It's an opinion. It's the most outlandish opinion that's out there that's propagated as being truth. In fact, there's no evidence to support it whatsoever. So this doesn't happen just in religion. It happens across the board. Conventional wisdom, popularity. Certainly this is, kind of the Oprah generation. If Oprah said it, it's got to be true, right? Or something like that. And it's just, that just doesn't make sense at all. Social media, mass media, internet, TV shows, Facebook, Spacebook, whatever they have out there. They've got all kinds of things out there where people are throwing all this stuff on there. And if you're not careful, you're going to swallow some of that and think that it's true when it's not. Please do not base your theological groundings on some Facebook adage, okay, where someone posted this and you went like, and then you think that you're taken care of now because you liked some commenter. I mean, you think that's a silly thing, but people actually do this. Or you follow the string of conversations in some of those discussions there, and it's just it's sad and amazing what people will say. And often limited or misapplied Bible knowledge. We're not saying people don't use the Bible at all. We're saying that it's easy for that Bible to be misused or misapplied. Okay? Just because you have Bible knowledge doesn't make you a scholar or right in any sense. It just means you're at least citing the right source, you're just not necessarily in the right way. You can use the right source in the wrong way. You can use the right tool in the wrong way, right? Okay, so I could take a chainsaw and use it as a mallet and start beating my chainsaw on my concrete pad to break up a concrete pad. Well, that's not really how it's supposed to work. It's a tool, but it's used in the wrong way. Or I could take my mallet and try to cut down a tree. You see what I'm saying? I mean, you got right good tools, but it doesn't mean you're applying them in the right way. So you really want to take the right tool and use it in the right way. All right. So what is wrong with all of these things, these sources of information? Well, first of all, they lack what we call transcendent knowledge. What do I mean by that? Transcendent just simply meaning they're above us all. They lack that knowledge that is above us all. If we're all stuck here on earth and none of us have died yet and gone into the afterlife, then we're all speaking from the same page, so to speak. We're all speaking from the same point of view, from the same point of reference. None of us has ascended beyond where we are. We're all stuck here in this earthly plane. The only way we can find out what is above us is to have someone who is above us speak to us, which is what God has done. And we know this, or at least we should know that. Okay? So we are limited to this life. 2 Corinthians 4:18 talks about that perspective. Paul says in that passage there, that we are, we're focusing on the things that are seen, or can focus on the things that are seen, but those things are temporary, they are limited, they are finite, whereas the things that are invisible or unseen, those are eternal in nature. Those are the more important things. We have no direct benefit, or there is no direct benefit for the afterlife there. In other words, talking to these people, what I mean by that statement is talking to these people and finding out what they believe really offers nothing in the way of ourselves. So now you know what your favorite preacher believes and what your pastor says or what your family member says, but how does that help you is really what we're saying here. How does that help you? By itself, it doesn't help you. And these things neither prove nor disprove the afterlife, neither prove nor disprove the gospel. In other words, they're not proofs. They're just opinions. You can't prove things with opinions. It just, you just can't operate that way. If you're going to prove something, then you need evidence and you need sound reasoning. Those are two things that help to lead to a sound conclusion or an inescapable conclusion. And then no one is either saved or lost based upon a human opinion. If we're going to have opinions, okay, you're entitled to your opinion all that you want to. And in fact, I tell people that. I say, well, you're entitled to your opinion. You can have your opinion all you want about God, about the heaven, about hell, about the afterlife, about your soul. But that doesn't make it so. It doesn't change anything by itself. It just means you have an opinion about it. So you have an opinion that you're saved. That doesn't make you saved. Say you have an opinion that you're lost. That doesn't make you lost. It just tells me that you have an opinion about that. Basically, your opinion is that your state of where your mind is at right now, based on what you feel, what your emotions are, what you've experienced personally, but it doesn't tell me anything about what is true. And that's what we need to know. We need to know what is true. So there's some questions that you can start asking, and these are very simple and direct questions. Like, say your friends start saying, well, I believe. Remember the I think, I feel, I believe? Okay? So, and you could put any one of those words in there. I think, I feel, I believe. So say they say, well, I believe that such and such is true. And you simply say, interesting. Why do you believe that? And all you're doing is simply turning that table. They don't see it, but you do. You're turning that table around to them. They just made a statement about what they believe in. Why should you have to sit there and defend or not, that statement or disprove it? Why should you do that? It's their statement. Let them prove it. So you simply throw the question back to them in a very polite way. You simply say, that's interesting. Why do you believe that? And then sit back and let them talk. Don't sit there and say, I know why you believe that. This is, you know, because of this and this, and tell them why they believe that. Well, you may be right, but that's not the point. You want them to talk. Remember our lesson this morning. Listen more, talk less, okay? Two ears, one mouth. Assuming both your ears are working. Okay, anyway, that was an inside pun. If you don't get it, it's okay. Okay, so you've got a situation here where you can use these, you know, where'd you get that from? Who told you? You can use that strategy. It's very effective. That's really what you're saying is where'd you get that from? Who told you that? Here's another one. Your friend says, well, I don't believe such and such. And we're not talking about, you know, what a person believes or doesn't believe about, say, the Seahawks or the Mariners or, you know, solar flares or Jupiter. We're talking about something that is extremely important, like where is their soul with God or who is God or where will they be when they die? I believe or I don't believe, you use that as a springboard into a discussion. Remember, you're the one already having built the channel here of discussion. You know that this is a path of conversation. You're forging that path and you're throwing down, in essence, the things that make that path go in a certain way. You're not filling it in with the words and the dialogue itself. That'll happen on its own. What you're doing is you're simply giving it direction. You are in charge of the conversation. Which means, again, this morning I said, that doesn't mean you dominate the conversation. It doesn't mean you do all the talking. It means you're in charge of where it's going and the reason for why it exists at all. So someone might just say, almost flippantly, and I don't mean that mean, but just without too much thinking, they might say, well, you know, I believe that God is thus and so. And it doesn't mean they're wrong. All you're saying is, why do you believe that? I shared with you sometime back, a guy I was talking to at the gym, and he says, you know, I believe that God is, he just got done telling me that he's an agnostic Christian, which I questioned him on that. I said, what? I don't even know what that is. And so he explained it to me, and then he told me, he says, well, I don't think I have to, you know, subscribe to the Bible and, you know, any particular organized religion. And I always wanted to say snarkily, you know, oh, so you want disorganized religion. No, I don't say that. But the idea, you know, he just says, I don't have to believe this or that or the other thing. But then he started saying, but I believe that God is good and just, and when I stand before him, I just stopped him right there. I said, wait a minute. You just told me that you don't believe in the Bible, you don't believe anything here. Why do you believe that God is good or just? How did you know that? How did you know God is good? And you know what? You know what the answer I got was? Nothing. I got no answer because he doesn't know. Outside the Bible, he can't know. Because remember, here's a key point that's not on the slideshow. Here's a key point that I've been saying for a long time now. The only factual information that we know about God, your soul, the spirit world, sin, salvation, heaven, hell, the only way that we can know factually about any of those things is if God told us. How can you know them otherwise? So that means that we need someone from that realm, from that state of existence, to tell us what those things are, because there's no way we can know them factually, and that's the key word here, otherwise. All we have is opinions about them. I think all good people go to heaven. That's an opinion. Okay? Because now we have yet to define what is good, what is heaven, and who gets them there. And so it's just an opinion until it's proven. Do you see what we're talking about here? Does this help you? All right, so you can use these things. Friend says, I just want the truth. And you say, how do you know what is true? You don't have to get into a big, long soliloquy about, well, this is truth. You know, truth is this grand. You know, you don't have to get into this philosophical discussion here. All you have to simply say is, how do you know what is true? And you find out a lot about that individual simply by listening to their answer. So say someone says, well, after making that statement, they say, well, I believe the Bible is true. I might even say, which part? Because a lot of people think the Old Testament's not true, the New Testament's true, because they're in conflict with each other. So I find out real quickly, well, which part? Say someone says, I believe the whole Bible is true. And I say, do you mean by true that God has revealed this message to us? And if they say yes, I say, great, we got a great foundation now. Now we can talk. We have something in common. I believe that too. Let's look and see what God says. Let's see what God has revealed to you and me. right? You say, well, that sounds easy when you do it. Actually, it's that easy sometimes. It really is. It's not that complicated. We make it complicated because we throw in emotions, fear, trepidation, every form of fear I can think of, procrastination, and all the reasons why it failed in the past. It's really not that hard. It's just you have to be aware of what's going on here and where this conversation is going. Here's some more here. A friend says, well, I'm at peace with God. And you say, well, what's that peace based upon? You don't have to sit there and accuse them and say, no, you're not. Okay? Because they really think they are. Okay? So don't question what a person specifically believes. This is something that took me a long time to learn. When someone says, I believe thus and so, I do not say, no, you don't. What I say is, where did you get that belief? Because obviously they believe it. I'm not here to tell them, no, you don't believe that. Because they do. They just told me. What I do is I try to question or get them to question why they believe that, or at least, if it's true, at least get them to understand where they got that from. That is far more important and advantageous to you than sitting there and saying, no, you don't believe that. That's not what you believe. Because now they're saying, this person just called me a liar, which is what you did. So you don't ask things like that. You simply say, what is that peace based upon? If you're at peace with God, I'd like to know about that. I'd like to know what the foundation for that relationship, that peaceful relationship that you have with God, what's that based upon? You're going to learn a lot from that question. You're going to discover a lot about that person, okay? Suppose it says, a person says, well, my pastor, priest, rabbi, et cetera, said, and it doesn't matter what they said, fill in the blank with whatever, but you can say, well, do you believe him? Or how do you know that he's right? Or what if he's wrong? These are great questions to ask. They're non-accusatory, they're non-confrontational, they're simply asking basically for more information. Okay, that's interesting, so he said that. And you don't have to sit there and say, well, but he's wrong, but anyway, for the sake of discussion, let's just pretend he's right. You don't have to go and do all that. You just simply have to say, well, okay, where did he get that from? What's his source of authority? Where did he get his authority from? And then, what if he's right? That would be good if he's right, if this is an agreement with God. But what if he's wrong? What are the implications of him being wrong? I mean, that's a fair question to ask, isn't it? How about your friend saying, well, God knows my heart. Has anyone ever gotten this? Okay, if you haven't yet, you will. Seriously, you will get this. If the more you talk to people, the more likely you're going to get that phrase, that statement, that opinion, because that's all it is, at some point or another. Really, it's just a statement that lacks anything else. In other words, when someone says, God knows my heart, my response in so many words is, friend, of course God knows your heart, because he's God and you're not. He knows about you far more than you know about him. But what you're doing, most people use that statement as kind of a defense, like, well, you know, it doesn't matter what you say or what you believe or what you teach me from the Bible, God knows my heart. That's all it is by itself is simply a statement. God knows my heart. And I actually agree with it. I say, yeah, God knows your heart. God knows. Believers, infidels, pagans, whatever. God knows everybody's heart. I mean, what are you trying to do with that? Not use those exact words. Right. That is how I phrase, in essence, my response to that. Say, so God knows every heart, even wicked people. So what do you mean then? I need clarification. I need to know what you're doing with that. You made a statement, but I don't understand what you mean by it. So can you help me out? Okay. And so you're really, again, imagine the table, kind of a round table that spins, okay? They just made a statement, and they're expecting you to respond to that statement by some means that they can attack, if you will. And all you do is you just turn the whole table around, and you say, okay, can you explain that? And what's interesting is that most people can't. Or it becomes just simply an emotional response. Well, I think that God knows, what's inside and that I'm right. And I said, look, I'm not disagreeing with you that whether God knows you're right or not, because he does know whether you're right or not. The question is not whether God knows you're right. The question really is, are you right? That's the question. that you need to lead that person to. Are you right? Not whether God knows it, but are you? And how do we be right? What's our standard for righteousness? You see how it always comes back to authority. So these are good questions to ask. And I'm going to get into something familiar. Some of this came out of our Thursday night class. You know, suppose someone says, well, we all evolved from nature. There is no God. Here's some things that you can ask in response. And you don't have to memorize all this. All I'm doing is getting your mind working here. It's kind of a critical thinking exercise. There's some good questions you can say. We all evolved from nature. There is no God. And you say, or can say, any one of these. Where did you get that from? How do you know that? Or what or who is nature and how do you know that? Or how can nature make these complex designs, intelligent decisions, but not be godlike? How did you get to that? How can functional, efficient, purposeful things come about by accident? Does this make sense? Now you're asking them to validate whether or not their own belief system makes sense. You didn't say it. You're asking them to do it. Okay? And have you ever observed this before? It's easy to say, well, we all evolved from nothing. Have you ever seen anything come from nothing before? Have you ever seen anything evolve from nothing before? In other words, this sounds perhaps good to you, but practically speaking, has it ever happened in your human experience? And shouldn't that be like a red flag if it hasn't? Like things don't just, you know, you're at the dinner table and then a giant turkey just evolves into its, you know, being there and you go, huh, that's interesting. That just doesn't happen. And of course, Richard Dawkins would say, well, over billions of years, that's nonsense. It's not going to happen. Okay. Oh yeah, that's a little side trail. And I can't help but doing that sometimes. another question you can have is, what do you do with all the evidence for God? We got all this evidence that supports God, God's existence, you know, not just an intelligent designer, but God himself. What do you do with all that? I mean, how'd you get rid of that? And what so convinced you otherwise? What so convinced you away from all that evidence to this seemingly concrete conclusion over here that we just evolved? Where'd you get that from? So you're just asking questions. You're not accusing. You're not doing it in an accusing way. You're simply asking questions. Here's another context here. Someone says, I believe that all people need to just love each other and do what's right. Okay, I'm not opposed to that. Are you? All right, so let's just agree with that. But that's not the question here. The question is, who decided that? Did you? Where'd that come from? Is this an opinion of yours? Or do you believe it's actually true? And if it is true, do you know where it came from? Okay, whose love are we to practice, yours or mine? What standard are we to use of right, yours or mine? What is the goal of love, and how do you know that? I mean, how do you know that for certain? Who determines what is right, and how do you know that for certain? I mean, how do you know these things? I'm not disagreeing with you. I actually am agreeing, and I'll even tell people that. It's like, absolutely, I agree with you, but do you know where that came from? And if they can't say, well, then that's a great opportunity for teaching them. Here's what the Bible teaches. Here's what God has said. Here's what Jesus Christ has said. And he is qualified to speak because he has come and proven this, that he has come from a pre-existence with God to this life and then has gone back to be with God, and he has spoken with this great authority. This is what he has said. Now, where'd you get your source? Okay, I mean, almost looking at like, you know, this huge boom, you know, this huge boulder of information. They got this little pebble over here. And then you're not having to do that on purpose. You're not trying to, again, make fun of them. Because remember this morning we talked about, we're not here to belittle people. But we are trying to get them to see that on their own. Where did they come from? Where did they get all that? Can you define love or right without appealing to a transcendent, above us all, universal standard? A standard that is above us that we did not create ourselves as people. Something that didn't come from us, but applies to us and that we are morally responsible to. Have you come up with that? And if you do appeal to an ultimate standard, where did that come from? Who created it? Why is it there? These are great questions to ask. You don't have to be super intelligent. You don't even have to be super knowledgeable about the Bible. You just have to be perceptive enough to know what questions to ask and where the conversation is really going. You need to be in charge of the conversation in that respect. And when you do that, you will learn much from the person you're talking to, and you will learn also where it needs to go from there. Here's another set of questions. I'm a good person. I know God loves me. I'm saved without religion. Here's some things you can say. Who told you that you're a good person? Where'd you get that from? I'm not disagreeing with you. I even tell people, I think you're a good person too, but that's really irrelevant. What I'm curious about is, how did you come to know that you're a good person? What standard did you use? How did you determine what is good? How do we determine what is evil? I mean, how do you come up with that, the opposite of good? Do you believe that God saves everyone just because he loves everyone? And I insert there John 3:16, where it does say that you will perish if God doesn't save you. He loves you no matter what. If you read the passage correctly, he loves you no matter what. It doesn't say that he saves you no matter what. Salvation is conditional. Love is unconditional. It's a great passage to go to. In fact, what I try to do, and I do this intentionally, not to get all, show my biblical knowledge and all that, but rather to beat them to the punch because I know where they're going to go. I usually go to verses that I am pretty confident someone's going to run to anyway. I go there first. It takes the wind right out of their sails, okay? And it gives me kind of the preemptive strike, if you will, as far as using that, not in their arsenal, but rather in mine, if you want to look at it that way. All I'm trying to do is say, hey, I'm familiar with that verse. I know what it says. And I know you're probably going to use that, but let's look at it. I'm not afraid of it. There's nothing in this Bible that I'm afraid of. There's nothing you can pull out of there that is going to shock me or that I'm going to go, oh, no, I don't believe that. There's nothing in there. So let's just go to find the most controversial passage that you want, if you must. But it's not going to change the final truth of the matter, the final summation of things here, okay? When you say religion, what do you mean by that? You can ask that question. How do you separate claims of being good and saved from otherworldly religious beliefs? I mean, are we just talking semantics here? You say religion and I say opinion or belief. I mean, aren't we talking religion? When we talk about transcendent beliefs about salvation and faith, aren't we talking about religion? So you don't like religion, but you practice it and you just don't want to call it religion? Right? It's kind of like the evolutionists, they believe in blind forces of nature. Even though they're very godlike and they make godlike decisions, they just don't want to call this thing God. But it's what it is, and they just want to skirt around that because they don't like the word. You know what I'm saying? People do this all the time. Suppose someone says, well, I already go to a different church, different than you. And you say, excellent. But that's not the point here. The point is, are you a Christian? Are you a Christian? It's a great way to start a conversation. I know a guy in Alaska that is now a part-time preacher and a very stable force in his congregation and a very solid Christian man simply because, perhaps myself among others, but at least I know this, that he has admitted that he says what really got me thinking was after I came with my wife who's a Christian, I came to services and you, Chad, came up to me and you said, are you a Christian? And that forced him to really examine his whole life. I mean, just that one question, are you a Christian? And if so, how did you become one? And why did you choose that one church that you go to over all others? What made your decision? What sold you on that church or that faith or that religion or whatever, that belief system? What sold you on that? Does church mean congregation or do you mean religion? Do you mean, I go to this religion, I subscribe to this religion, or are you saying I go to this group of people over here? Which do you mean here? All you're asking for is clarification there. Are you an active member of that church or do you just go to it, like people do? Like, I go to church. Like, there's a building and it says church on it and I go there. Or are you actually participating in that group? Does your church teach the Bible as the only revealed word of God, or do they use the Bible, or how do they use the Bible? What does your church teach about Jesus Christ? Would you please join me as a guest at my congregation this next Sunday, if you're not so opposed? Would you come with me? These are good things to ask. These are important questions to ask. These are some questions. I'll just end here. You can start the conversation yourself before they say anything. Hey, what do you believe about God? I'm interested. I'm curious to know, and I think it would be important for us to talk about this. How did you come to that knowledge? How did you come to that understanding? Do you believe that the Bible is God's message to all people? And if so, then where does that lead you? Or if not, then how do you know that? Do you have an eternal soul? And if so, what does that imply? And if not, how do you know? What do you expect to happen to you after you die? And how do you know this? I have found that to be one of the most pressing, important questions that you can ask anybody. What do you believe is going to happen to you after you die? Try that on your family or friend sometime when you have an opportunity. And I'm not talking in the midst of Thanksgiving, you know, dinner or something like that, across the table with 20 other people sitting there, hey, Uncle George, what do you think about, you know, don't do that, because then he's just going to get all defensive and who knows what you'll get. But in private, if you're having coffee with someone, hey, I've got a question for you. I would really like to know, what do you believe is going to happen to you after you die? You're going to find out a lot about that person by asking that question. What do you believe in is the ultimate purpose for your existence? And how do you know? How do you determine that? Are these good questions? Can you do this? A lot more hesitancy on that one. Okay. Could you, with practice, do this? I think you can. In fact, I know you can. It's just whether you will or not. I mean, again, this isn't neurosurgery. If it was, I couldn't do it. If it was rocket scientists, I'm not qualified. Where did I get all these questions from? Well, really, these came out of my own experience. I didn't write these out of a book. I came up with all these questions. So if I can do that, me being, you know, the simple preacher that I am, I'm sure that you could come up with questions similar to that as the need arose. Is this helpful to go through this in this way? All right, glad to hear that. Well, we're out of time, and I am going to offer, now that we're done with this, if anyone wants this whole slideshow, I will send it to you. All you got to do is just email me, and then let me know, and I will send that to you, okay? And if you've taken a bunch of notes, I do not apologize for that. I think you need to phrase all this in your own words anyway. That helps you to learn it better. But I do want to make it available if anyone wants that, and I would strongly recommend, as I said recently in a lesson, do not just take this information, file it away, shelve it away, put it in some computer file somewhere, and then not use it. This information is being given to you to use, not to store. So use this information. Study it well. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to do a lot. It's going to open your eyes and open your life to a lot of opportunities that you may have never seen before. And I'm doing the same thing. All this stuff I'm telling you, I'm doing it too. So I'm not telling you guys need to go out there and I'm going to just preach pulpit lessons, you know. I'm doing the same stuff myself and then the lessons too, okay? So, and you're benefiting from all of this. So just keep that in mind, okay? Any comments before we close tonight? All right, so who has a closing prayer tonight? Who's been selected?